my topic tonight is what adversity can teach us. And it kind of extends out what I was talking about last week, what money can teach us. In many respects, they're kind of the same thing. But money isn't always adversity. And adversity is. And we can actually benefit from our problems if we study what in us is threatened by the situation. Ram Dass refers to what I'm calling adversity as grist for the mill. It's the rough stuff that goes into the mill and it helps chew up the grain. So, what is adversity? In large part, it's dust-ups that we have with other people. Particularly, people who have power over us. Our relatives, our employers, our landlords or sweethearts, our friends, teachers, etc. But also complete strangers are a real good source of adversity, especially if they're behind the wheel of a car in motion near us. Or just people we run into, walking down the sidewalk, shopping in a store, waiting in the hospital. People know how to push our buttons, and vice versa. But then there are also the impersonal events, like loss of money, inconvenience. You go out to the car, you've got time to get where you're going, and the battery's dead. Suddenly, your whole plan goes out the window. Embarrassments. And this can be the faux pas. For example, the unintended, slightly indecent double entendre that can go out in the weekly Sangha email. I don't know if any of you read it that way. I didn't catch it until I received it in my mailbox, and I read it over, and it jumped out at me. I've been chuckling about that ever since. Another usually impersonal event is illness. It can really put us through the ringer. And the misfortunes of the people we love. Plenty of other things that happen, and as a result, suffering arises. So, here we have this practice. What do we do about adversity? Well, the intuitive answer is that we try to be prepared. We try to plan our lives, arrange our affairs, so that we can avoid it altogether. Good luck with that. But then, when it happens, the intuitive response is to act fast to minimize the damage, to do something about it. Well, you may have heard the expression, don't just do something, sit there. And that's pretty much the approach that Buddhism takes. It's in the suttas quite a bit. They say, for example, that there are four pairs of events that we can't control. They are gain and loss, pleasure and pain, status and disgrace, and censure and praise. Those last two pairs, I tend to forget because their meaning is a little fuzzy to me when I'm not really focusing on them. But a couple of months ago, I had an experience that informed me what this was about. I was walking around the neighborhood with Carla. We go on a daily medicinal walk. So we're fairly well known in the neighborhood. And there was this crime that happened about six blocks away from us. We walked by the scene. We recognized some of the people involved. We were very curious. Police didn't want to answer our questions too much. We went around the corner and there was a TV crew. We figured they must know something. So, being curious, we went up and talked to them. And after a few minutes, they thought we seemed rather knowledgeable. So they asked if they could turn the camera on us. And I said, why not? So I had my local TV debut. And I found out why not. Because, you know, they edit, and then they do the talk over, they talk around you. And it turned out that this event in the neighborhood, which we hadn't really learned about yet, generated quite a lot of controversy. And one of the things that I said somewhere in the middle of what I said sounded like I was firmly on one side of the controversy that I didn't even know about. So I received censure and praise from my neighbors, and it resulted in both status and disgrace. So that was kind of fun, walking around trying to be incognito for a couple of months until it kind of died down. So anyway, all of these phenomena, these four pairs of things, gain and loss, pleasure and pain, status and disgrace, censure and praise, are just phenomena that arise and pass away. And our control over them is limited far more than we like to admit. The Lokavipata Sutta goes on to say, these conditions among human beings are inconstant, impermanent, subject to change. Knowing this, the wise person mindfully ponders these changing conditions. And as a result, desirable things don't charm the mind. Undesirable ones bring no resistance. Not being charmed in the mind by the desirable things, and not resisting the undesirable ones as a result of mindfully pondering them. So this doesn't mean that when we face adversity, we don't do anything about it. We don't just give up. We do what we can, day after day. And then, boom, adversity happens. And yet we're taken by surprise each time. How can this happen to me? The battery is dead. I've got to be in Redwood City to lead a half day. When this happens, the mind is very productive. Whatever the adversity is, the mind will tell us, it's somebody else's fault. It was a mistake. I just don't do that usually. They misunderstood. They cheated me. They were rude. And on and on. Long stories get told by our minds, and they become a part of our permanent collection of attitudes. And then they influence our entire futures. And if we act out of this reactivity, we have karma. So, if a tree branch falls on the roof, what should you do? Well, take the branch down, fix the roof, or get the landlord to take care of it. Meanwhile, watch the stories that your mind tells you. See what it is that you're fussing about. You can feel how the body is responding to this adversity. Feel that, but also watch what the mind is doing to feed that suffering. Maybe you're fussing about the neighbor who owns the tree, or you're fussing about the money that you're going to lose fixing this, or the fact that the landlord is responding slowly or inadequately. Just look. What's going on? What are the stories? And always ask, what does this have to do with me? How is this mine or about me? Tree branch falls on the roof, and it's all about me. Always. If you dig deep enough, there's going to be a link to me or mine. The Jara Sutta says the way to escape the suffering of adversity is to give up clinging. People grieve for what they see as mine. We need to remember, nothing possessed is constant. Nothing is constantly possessed. So in other words, we can keep on owning it, but it's going to fall apart. Or it can still be shiny new and works fine, and we're going to lose it. Realizing this, the wise shouldn't be devoted to the idea of mine. So the real lesson is in seeing the connection between the suffering from the adversity and our idea of what we are. We are the owner of this thing. We are the person who's not at fault in this accident. Whatever it is that's really got a grip on us. So the easy answer to adversity is let go, stop clinging. But that is way too easy, so much so that it's useless to us. Maybe if we were in the first stage of enlightenment, yeah, just remember, let go. But in the clutch of the moment, when we're scowling or throwing up our arms, those sort of instinctual responses to adversity, we can't let go. Not at that moment. We're really just upset right then. However, if we learn from this event, maybe next time we won't be blindsided so badly. So when we suffer, seize the opportunity to learn by watching yourself suffer. You know, this is an opportunity I can't resist to read one of my favorite poems by Rumi. This being human is a guest house. Every morning a new arrival. A joy, a depression, a meanness, some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all. Even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture, still treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whoever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. So those moments when we suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, we can be comforted by knowing that we have, in that moment, received an educational opportunity that's free, sort of. All we need to do is take advantage of it. And we can take advantage at any point after the calamity hits. It's just that the longer we wait before taking advantage of it, the more homework we'll have to do to learn the lesson. Now, Thich Nhat Hanh does offer us some balm for our moments of intense suffering. And you can exchange the word anger in this little poem for whatever emotion is tormenting you. Breathing in, I know that anger is here. Breathing out, I know that the anger is in me. Breathing in, I know that anger is unpleasant. Breathing out, I know this feeling will pass. Breathing in, I am calm. Breathing out, I am strong enough to take care of this anger. The sooner we bring ourselves back to mindfulness, remembering that we're suffering because of our attaching personal meaning to whatever we've lost, the less we'll suffer. It doesn't make us better Buddhists. We're a good Buddhist just because we do this. We do the best we can. Doing it faster just means it's not going to hurt so much. That's all. That's enough motivation for me. And I have told this story before. I apologize for repeating. But it was such a striking event for me. I think I'd been teaching that evening. And so, you know, I was kind of in a practice frame of mind. And I was on the freeway. I was to the left of the right-hand lane, you know, I wasn't in the slow lane. And all of a sudden, someone just zipped quickly right in front of me, going slow. And, you know, just automatically my foot slammed on the brake. And I saw that happen. I was sort of like, wow, good job, foot. And then I saw what my mind did. And it started, I mean, it just went right to anger. What an idiot. Why did they do that? Don't they know that's dangerous? They could have caused such an accident. Why are they going slow when, I mean, why do they have to get in front of, and then I saw it, and I thought, whoa, I don't want this. This is just more suffering. There's a couple of suttas in which Buddha said what I was doing was like standing in front of a fire out of control and throwing wood on it. I was roasting myself. So, I chose not to. And I immediately up came this feeling of gratitude that the foot did it. And neither I nor the other driver was hurt or had to go through the whole trauma of an accident. But, you know, whenever we come back, even if we've already worked ourselves up real well and we've sent a blistering email or we've smashed some beloved piece of pottery, probably beloved to the other person, but anyway, even if we have really worked the thing up into a catastrophe, we can still benefit from the situation. At our earliest opportunity, review the feelings and what happened in the mind. Now, this is where it gets tricky, because when we look at what happened in the mind, it's very easy to get pulled back into the story and start talking about how that other driver was such a jerk. You know, and it wasn't my fault, and they should have known, and whatever. So we need to be cool. We need to be mindful to look at our part of it, not anybody else's. How did I make myself suffer? And why did it hurt so much? How was it linked to my sense of who I think I am? And then meditate. Letting those feelings that were in the body come up and just be with them. Be with them with the kind of attitude that you take to go visit someone who's sick, someone you care about. Just be there. Just let them tell you their story. Let them in their own time become what Rumi calls guides from beyond. So I'm suggesting that after we've done the suffering, we go through it again. Why? I mean, isn't that just like prolonging our unpleasantness? We're doing it in order to learn and understand what causes our suffering. And because doing this exercise reconditions the mind, so that next time we can be mindful a little sooner and in the aftermath of the adversity, suffer a little less. Thank you.